you wouldn't believe it if I told you I'm outside in another car park. And no, it's not the same venue, but I'm still in London in my company today is?
GUB Holland. It's a flower bulb company from Holland. We export to landscape and consumer market.
And your name?
Jos Smit.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Sideshow Garden Podcast.
So you'll gather Joss. Did I say that right, Joss?
Yeah.
Joss?
Yeah, pronounce it like Josh.
Yeah. Josh.
Josh.
Or do I say Josh without the, like, in a Y?
Oh, I don't care. I don't care as you know my who I am, that's okay. It's a difficult name in the UK, but it's okay.
The business is something that I have never covered on the Sideshow before. And do I put it under one label? Like, if you were to say what Peter Donegan does, it might be garden design and build, or realization of gardens, maybe, as the French put it. In your case, is it that you're a bulb grower?
Yeah, our company grows 250 acres of flower bulbs. We breeders of tulips, so we have a tulip breeding program with seven other companies because it's very labor and financial intensive. And what we supply is flower bulbs, quality flower bulbs for the public green and gardens, private gardens, estates. Universities is getting more and more popular in the UK again.
One of the first conversations I ever had about bulbs was with the Dutch ambassador in Dublin at the launch of the Molly Bloom tulip. Do you remember that?
No, I have to say no. No, I don't know. We did a big thing in Dublin Park. That was the writer James Joyce. Is that the right name?
That was the exact one. They call it the Molly Bloom tulip.
Okay. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, so that's one of the things we did. We did a big flower bulb mosaic in the park in Dublin. And that was a big event, good event. And it's always good to do some PR for the flower bulbs in general. And a lot of people love the color in the spring. So that's what we try to achieve.
I was at that event, logically. We're on a little bit of press repeat, but we're warming up. We'll get there. There's two different accents and two different sets of ears. My apologies to you listening at home. As I remember that, if you were to take, like, the Andy Warhol way of doing Marilyn Monroe, those posters, that's the way those bulbs were done when they came into flower. I was there when they were not in flower, when they had only just peeped above ground level. And when it came into flower, those photographs were absolutely stunning in the National Botanic Gardens in Glasnevin in Dublin. Were you brought across especially to do that?
Yeah, we were asked by I think the Dutch embassy, because it was a special event. So we bring people around who know it. The old garden designer, architect from Keukenhof Garden, famous flower bulb garden in Holland. He designed it. We planted it with school kids around Dublin. And it was a good event. And
one of the things that you do that caught my eye, and this might pique the ears of some of the listeners, is... have I got it right? Is it a wildflower mix, but it's still bulbs, not inverted commas wildflowers, as you and I would know it as per landscaping?
Yeah, we are really specialised in flower bulbs, not in seed, but all the flower bulbs what we planting more and more is for naturalising. So you plant them 1 year and they come back for 10, 15 years. And that's what we do more and more, because it's low maintaining and it's a lot of colour. And That brings a lot of color for years after years, and there are a lot of flower bulb varieties what bring it for naturalizing. So that's superb for us and for the customer.
In my garden at home, I planted 1,200 daffodils just below the surface of the lawn, and I've not touched them, and I don't intend to touch them. In the old days, I'm going to ask you a series of questions here. People used to tie the daffodils over. They were planted underneath the roses. They would lift them up every year. They would dry them out. They would put them back down again. I have no intention of ever doing that. Which side do you sit on?
No, it's not necessary to lift them, because when you leave them in the ground and they established and they come back year after year, you don't have to do nothing. The only thing what is very important is that you let them die off naturally, the leaves, and don't cut the leaves before they are died off. Otherwise, the energy of the from the bulb is not back in the bulb, and then the result is not that good as you let them die off naturally.
Did you see people in the 80s, I say 80s because that's how I remember it, when Cliff Richard was big in music?
That's it.
Sorry.
Stones.
I'm a Stones fan myself, not a Cliff Richard man, but that's only because we were all going on a summer holiday. Really didn't do it for me when weather wasn't really that great where I lived anyway. But everybody seemed to tie over their daffodil bulbs and put elastic bands around them or tie them up with daffodil leaves. And I get it because it made it look a little bit neat and tidy, but horticulturally, it wasn't the thing to do.
What I told you before, it's not necessary. What we try or what we do on the moment is planting alliums and commercias in the same mixture with the daffodils, because then when the leaves are dying off and the buds are dying, people don't want to see it because it doesn't look nice. But then the eye catches are the alliums and the commercias, and instead of, and with that mixture you have beautiful color for 10 weeks.
Can I ask you about garden design trends and bulbs? You've been in the industry how long?
Yeah, for 30 years. My dad was a bulb grower, so already for 30 years really in the business. But my dad was a bulb grower, so when I was 7 years old, I was on the flower fields already. So for a long time already in the business.
What, if I go back 30 years, was the bulb of choice? Or the top-selling bulb, maybe, is the better way to ask that. And then 20 years, 10 years now, and maybe then into the future. Can you give me that one?
Yeah, 20, 30 years ago, the real flower bulb what everybody was planting was a tulip. And the tulip is a beautiful product. It a lot of colors and shapes. But it changed from tulips to naturalizing bulbs more and more in the last 5 years. We see that we plant more mixtures, so we have a longer flowering time, and where it goes in the future, that depends a little bit what the people who are on the television and the real people who make the clothes. The clothes. Yeah, they make the colors and the shapes and everything, and we follow it. But the breeding of a tulip and a daffodil takes 15 years, so we cannot react on that. We do what we can and have a wide range of flower bulbs in our catalogues and everything. Yeah.
You had a difficult year, and well, you just noted it there. The catalogues, they've obviously got to be printed before you start selling, let's say in 2018. But the weather that we've had in 2018 may have changed based on what you had suggested you would sell in 2017 for the 2018 season. Just to clarify that question for you at home listening, it's not to be confusing, but if you're planting a bulb in October, the decision on that landscape is usually made 12, maybe 24 months beforehand. How and ever, if you're planning in 2017 for 2018 and so on, you bear in mind that this year we had 3 months of snow and then we had 3 months of drought. Has that had an effect, or will that have an effect on what you have done in business?
No, for the growing of flower bulbs, it was infecting. The weather was really infecting, so it was a poor yield this year. But there are so many flower bulbs available, and we're already for 107 years in the business, so we know where to go. We work a lot with contractors who grow for us other varieties, and there are a little bit less varieties available. But still enough color and varieties. I don't see a big problem in that, no.
Talk to me about the seasonality of how your business works. I'll give you an example. I spoke to a peony rose specialist at Chelsea Flower Show this year, and I was saying, you know, most people would say to me that my quiet season is in the wintertime, and I would say no. It's usually the opposite. And I said to him, is that the same for you? And he said, my busiest time is potting up season, which is October, November, December, and then the rest of the year is essentially selling. And I was saying, okay, that's a little bit contrary to what people maybe perceive or would suggest it should be. In your case, how does the bulb growing work? Bearing in mind the scale and the size of the amount of land that you have to work. What's the calendar season? Do you plant a bulb in the ground? When do you harvest it? How does that bit all work?
The whole system is that we plant flower bulbs in September, October time, commercial on the field. Then they go in the winter, so we cover them a little bit with straw, so they are really happy underneath the soil. Then they start flowering in February, March, April. Then we do we select them on illnesses and viruses, what is very important. So to keep a clean stock, we take the virus out. So that's the work we do in March, April time. Then in May, June, they flower. They are on the field. In tulips, we had the tulips. So all the big flower fields, as you maybe know in Holland, they're getting de-headed because then all the energy is going back in the bulb. So you've got a stronger tulip. In July, we start harvesting the bulb with machinery. We harvest them at once, bring them in big bins into the warehouse. We dry them, we grade them, and then we put them under the right temperature, humidity to store them and supply them in September, October, November time to the customers.
You mentioned there viruses, disease, pests. What has been the biggest pest, disease, virus over the last 30 years that you've had to deal with?
Yeah, that's in tulips. It's Fusarium. It's a bacteria, what is called Fusarium. And that's one year or the other year, it's different. Depends on the humidity during growing time and lifting time. And the last 2 years was a real worse year with Fusarium. So what we try with new varieties, as I told you, we have a breeding company as well, to find varieties that are not that sensible for Fusarium. And that's going very well, but it takes a long time because it takes 15 years to bring a new tulip variety on the market. But that's the biggest disease there is on the moment in flower bulbs, the Fusarium in tulips.
Sorry, there's a forklift beside us and he's not a very good driver, but he'll be away in a couple of minutes, so just bear with us there and hopefully it's okay for you. In my business, we seem to go from, it went very much from a period of we want a beautiful landscape, we want a beautiful garden, to we want no maintenance whatsoever at all. Concrete, not concrete in the whole thing, but essentially box hedging, espalier trees, decking, which I, at the time, declined to do, or Indian sandstone, or Corton steel and allium, and things have trends, is, I guess, the overall point that I would make. In your case, did you go from a point where it became, bearing in mind when people ask for low maintenance, all of the time, did that affect you, or did it have a contra? No, Peter, because we were dealing with parks, not the domestic landscaping market, or again because of bees and biodiversity and what they're teaching children in school, that you've had to relabel maybe or remarket, or did it change how you the way you suggested sold things?
It really changed because we supply a lot to local our authorities and councils, and they don't have the labor anymore to plant every year the tulips. So we're changing from very labor-intensive tulip planting to more naturalizing planting, one-year planting, and you can leave it in for 10, 15 years. And of course, that's changing. So we use less tulips, but still, when there is a beautiful border or a roundabout and you want an impressive flower bulb display, tulips are beautiful in there. And what we suggest to people more and more, and what is a little bit low maintaining as well, is to plant them in big pots and store the pots in a warehouse and bring them out in the springtime, and you can put them where you want to get a nice color over there. So it's always changing the business and the bulb we use. Yeah, it's getting more or less labor intensive. Yeah,
I think it's starting to rain here, so I might just have to pause this and we'll move to somewhere.
I'm okay, it's good for my air.
Now I'm after distracting myself and it's a little bit windy and there's a helicopter going overhead. Probably a little bit too noisy, and I hope it's okay for you listening at home. For those listening to this and saying, okay, bulb display, I can plant one, let's say, Allium Rosenbachanium, Globetrotter, I think it's the other one, and they're just the most magical things that are so childlike that I've ever seen in my lifetime. And when I look at what I was reared with growing up, which was, you know, the standard daffodil or the the standard Tulip, it's like going from very much classical music to hearing Led Zeppelin for the first time. There's no comparison between. If people are on their mobile phones now having a rummage through Google, you can press the middle button on your iPhone and go straight and do that now. If you were to say, well, we did that one, what is that one garden that you did? What's the amount of bulbs? What's the most magical display that you've ever done? You can give me a couple of answers on that if you want.
Oh, yeah, we did a lot of beautiful displays. One of them where we did on Wimbledon tennis courts. They got a trial ground over there, practice ground, and they have a big embankment over there. It was all green and messy. We did a planting over there with daffodils, alliums, and camassia, and that looks beautiful, and it was on an embankment, so we planted that with a machine on 35 degrees and an under turf planting machine. That was a beautiful thing. We supplied the Kew Gardens and Wesley. They have beautiful displays. We did an allium display in Kew Garden, I think, 7 years ago with 10, 15 different allium varieties. But yeah, the RES gardens are beautiful.
And we were talking about this briefly before. So my garden at home is about an acre, and I planted 1,200 daffodils. I don't do things by halves, but I planted 1,200 daffodils up the driveway because I wanted to have an impact. And when they came up year one, you could see where I planted every single one, and it wasn't evenly distributed. I literally kicked out the bag, and wherever they were, I just made a hole and filled it in with a little bit of compost and covered it over. Boom, bye-bye. Biggest problem I had was the squirrels and the birds coming along, pulling them up out of the ground. That's okay. We can live with a little bit of that. Some field across in Cornwall, you're going to find one daffodil bulb up here, and you can thank me for it. But I wanted to take on the rest of the front part of the lawn, which, let's say for argument's sake, is about a quarter of an acre. And I decided in my head, no, I'm going to go at it this year, which I don't have much time on, so it may end up as next year, but I'm going to do it anyway. What should I be planting into the front lawn, bearing in mind I'm clever enough to know that I don't want it coming up while the grass is growing? And the beauty about the daffodils for you listening at home, I've got three bulb varieties planted in. One is an early, one is a middle, one is a late. So it will flower from about February up until about March, April. So just as the grass is getting a bit too long, they then need to be topped, or they're dying off in between as the grass is growing up over them. But I want to take in not just the border run up the avenue, I want to take in the rest of it. What would you do if you were me, or what bulbs would go into that?
To plant a nice mixture from February till end of April, we start with crocus. What is the crocus? Is the first flower bulb, what brings the spring in. Three different kind of crocuses. Cynodox after that. And then after that you come with botanical tulips and botanical daffodils in all different kind of colors. Finishing with a botanical daffodil called Thalia. What is a white one? What is a real late one? It's multi-flowering. And then with a nice blue Camassia Quamash, what is not a real tall one, but is 30 centimeters tall. And that gives you a color display from February till the end of April. And when you want to succeed in that as well and make it even longer than April, what I told you, put alliums in it. Because an allium is one of the bulb varieties what don't have to recover. Soon as the allium brings its flower, you can cut it. And all the energy is already back in the bulb. So they don't have to recover. And then you can get your flower display till the end of July with alliums.
Two questions now. The best way to plant one bulb on its own for Mary and Jimmy, I don't know. I'm sorry if you're not a Mary and a Jimmy, but there you go. They want to plant one bulb, or they've bought five bulbs or three allium bulbs, which are about the size of my fist, to be quite fair about it, from what I've seen of yours.
Yeah, when you have a small amount of flower bulbs, you take a spade, you make a small hole and put the bulbs in. Just 1.5 size soil on top of the bulb. And that's the easy way when you have small quantities to plant the bulbs. Yeah.
If you're planting a quarter of an acre, it makes it a little bit different. You can't dig 4,500 holes in the ground, approximately. There is a better way, or a more efficient way to do that.
Yeah, there is a more efficient way to do it. We have an under-turf planting machine that cuts the turf. There are two iron feeds going underneath makes a flower bed of 1 meter wide that drops the bulbs in with the belt. We can adjust the belt with how many bulbs we want on the square meter. Depends on, or you want it on the entrance road of a big city. You want a real density flower display. But when you have a castle or your natural garden, you want it more looking natural. So instead of 300 bulbs, we're planting 120 bulbs on the square meter. And that's done with a machine, and that machine can plant 25,000 bulbs in an hour time.
Holy God!
And 1,500 square meters a day, and that's a concept what we use a lot in the UK, and what's very successful.
The way I was doing it 14, 15 years ago was we would take the undercutter, as you would use for undercutting carrots in fields, roll back the soil as if you were harvesting roll-out turf, or as you would know it maybe in a B&Q garden centre or something like that, then rotivate the soil below, and then once you did that, you could plant the bulbs straight into it because it was just stand on the things and they were A-OK. I say just stand on it, there's a little bit more to it than just that, but you pushed it below surface and then the turf went back down on top of it. But you've just topped me in the no, Peter, technology and machinery has moved on department.
Yeah, we beat you on that. And it makes it easy. And that's the same thing for a lot of councils and local our authorities. The bigger project, there is no labor available anymore, or it's very labor intensive. You get a lot of blisters in your hand, what you don't want when you have to take the spade for 7 hours a day. So yeah, the machinery is very successful, and we use that a lot.
Where do you see bulb growing in the next 10 years? And that sounds a very far off question. I'll give you an example. I had a conversation 2 days ago with a garden show manager, and we were chatting, and she was saying, what do you see as the next trend? And we referenced log roll and cobble lock and decking and house plants and people being encouraged to grow their own vegetables. And she suggested maybe rockeries were possibly, or would they be, raising a question, would they be coming back because everything seems to go around and around as house plants. What's the next bit for your company? And you would, I gather, plan that far in advance.
Yeah, well, that's a nice question. Well, that's a good question. I thought about it a lot, but what the new trend is, I don't have a clue yet, because what I told you, there are so many new bulb varieties and colors on the market already, and to come up with a new trend is difficult. But what we see more and more is that people planting in the garden, because it's a lot of concrete what they got in the garden, in pots and big patio pots, to give it color. That's a new trend what we see more and more. And yeah, we see that the environment friendly flower bulbs are coming up really heavily, because we want all the bees and the butterflies back in the nature. And when councils buy the flower bulbs, a bee mixture, we donate money to the Bug Life, and that's a very good charity for the environmental friendly flower bulbs. So that's a trend what we see.
How does that part work? Don't get me wrong, my education is in horticulture and I get it, but does that environmentally friendly part start at source, as in when you are growing the bulbs? Do you therefore then, how would you say it, not that it's organic certified, I don't want to use that buzzword overly, but sorry, there's a forklift going in the background again, he's come back to haunt us, but he'll go again in a little bit. But do you start that practice at source, where you don't use weed killers or you don't use insecticides and you don't use fungicides, and therefore then when they go through to the end user, say me and I'm landscaping a park or a castle in France, I can say to them, well, it ticks all of these boxes?
Yeah, that's a really important part of the bulb growing in Holland, but all over the world on the moment. As I told you before, my dad was a bulb grower. He went on Friday praying the flower bulbs every Friday, and on Saturday he did fertilize them every Saturday. Now we spray on demand and we fertilize on demand. We know much more. We measure everything before planting in the soil. We use a lot of green fertilizer, so grasses. After bulbs are harvested, we seed them in with grass, what is a green fertilizer, so that's very good. And we use less and less chemicals. We are kept certificated as company. We have to do a lot, use less chemicals, what we use more and more in the flower bulbs is seaweed. Seaweed as a fertilizer, but as well seaweed gives a kind of smell what a lot of animals don't like, so they don't touch them anymore. And so the biological fertilizers, the biological, not chemicals, but yeah, we use more and more biological stuff to get good flower bulbs. And that's getting more and more important.
And I'm 42. I know I don't look at face for radio hashtag, but 30 years ago, if I turned around and said commercial growing on a couple of hundred acres, if you would have said you were going to use seaweed, I would suggest people might have laughed a little.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, it's changing quickly. We see a new group of growers, the young growers, sons of the sons from the old growers. They look totally different to chemicals. The chemicals are extremely expensive, so that's one reason that we use less. But they know that the environment is really important for the whole bulb industry as well to get a better PR, a better promotion in it, and that's working well. So there is a lot of research done on using all biological fertilizers, biological stuff, what keeps the illnesses and the animals away and the insects from the flower bulbs, and that's getting more and more important.
I'm going to ask you this maybe, and I might be trickling over an old question, so I apologize for that, but do you find that there's an ebb and a flow, an up and a down, where let's say the domestic garden center market is hypothetically 10% and the commercial parks, landscaping governments are 90%, and then one drops down and the other goes up? And I'll give you a funny example. At the height of the recession, you could buy a 1 litre pot of potato seeds in a garden centre for €2.79, and you could buy 5 kgs of potatoes in a supermarket fully grown for €2.49.
Yeah, there's an up and down. We see that flower bulbs in Holland, what we grow, 60% is used for cut flowers. Yeah. Growers, they supply it to cut flower growers, forces, 60% of the tulips. 40% is going to dry sale market, so consumer market, retail and landscaping. The retail and the garden center market is getting less, but more in higher quality, because yeah, there are a lot of consumers who don't use that much flower bulbs anymore in the garden. Comparing to 5 years, we go up again, because what I told you before, the environmental friendly flower bulbs, people love it and they know how important it is to plant flower bulbs for the bees and the butterflies to get enough pollen and pollination all around. But is there a trend going on that is going up and down? No, not that much. I think 60% is flower forcing, and the rest, the 40%, we use for landscaping and the consumer market. And that will stay, I think, the same in the coming 10 years. Yeah,
I got to give... you couldn't ask for more salubrious surroundings. There's a Deadline courier van just pulled up, and I think he's in a bit of trouble. This interview is with thanks to Andrew Fisher-Tomlin, Andrew Wilson, Mark Gregory, three of them all former guests of the show over the last 7 years, is it, of the Sod Show, nearing 400 episodes. The three gentlemen of London College of Garden Design are the people who made this one happen, and to them, thank you very much. And if you're on the Twitter or the Facebook or one of them, be sure and just give London College of Garden Design a high five and tell them I said thanks. It really means a lot to have their support in making this one happen. If you're looking for any information on Joss Smith and his company Jub, just drop me a line at Sod Show on Twitter, or just put Joss, J-O-S-S-M-I-T, two separate words, Joss Smith, into the search engine with Sod Show, and I'll have all his details in today's show notes. In the meantime, Josh, thank you so much for your time. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you as well, and hopefully we get a colourful 2019 in the springtime, and thanks for your time anyway.
Pleasure, my man, and to you listening at home, thanks so much. Take care, have a good one. Bye-bye.